Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor knows brains from the inside and the outside. Harvard-trained, Dr. Taylor studied schizophrenia and severe mental illnesses. But then in 1996, she suffered a severe stroke that left her unable to walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of her life. That's not even close to the end of her story. Over the course of 8 years, she recovered, wrote a New York Times bestseller about her experience, My Stroke of Insight, A Brain Scientist's Personal Journey. Then she gave a now-famous TED Talk that became the first one to go viral. Soon, Oprah was calling, and Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor was on her way to being named as one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in the World for 2008. She speaks in town on Thursday evening. I'll introduce Jill in just a moment, but first let's listen to a portion of her famous TED Talk.
I didn't know that I couldn't speak or understand language until I tried. So he recognizes that I need help, and he gets me help. And a little while later, I'm riding in an ambulance from one hospital across Boston to Mass General Hospital, and I curl up into a little fetal ball. And just like a balloon with the last bit of air just right out of the balloon, I just felt my energy lift, and I felt my spirit surrender. And in that moment, I knew that I was no longer the choreographer of my life, and either the doctors rescue my body and give me a second chance at life, or this was perhaps my moment of transition. When I woke later that afternoon, I was shocked to discover that I was still alive. When I felt my spirit surrender, I said goodbye to my life, and my mind was now suspended between two very opposite planes of reality. Stimulation coming in through my sensory systems felt like pure pain. Light burned my brain like wildfire, and sounds were so loud and chaotic that I could not pick a voice out from the background noise, and I just wanted to escape, because I could not identify the position of my body in space. I felt enormous and expansive, like a genie just liberated from her bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through a sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana. I found nirvana.
Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
Well, you describe one point of the aftermath of this stroke that you had as nirvana. Help me there. A stroke equals nirvana?
You know, I think that the being a brain scientist, I look at everything, every ability we have because we have cells that perform that function. And on the morning of the hemorrhage, over the course of 4 hours, the brain circuitry of my left brain that connected me to my normal external reality went offline. And in the absence of that left brain attachment to normal reality, I shifted into the consciousness of my right mind, which had the experience for me of euphoria. And I do believe every ability we have because we have brain cells that perform that function, and I managed to tap into that circuitry, and it was beautiful.
At the time, did you know what was going on?
On the morning of the stroke, it took me a while to figure out what exactly was going on. I knew that I was experiencing some sort of what I describe as neurological weirdness. But over that course of 4 hours, eventually my right arm went paralyzed by my side. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm having a stroke. And for me, that was the tell.
Scary?
I was very fortunate that I never hooked into fear circuitry. Instead, I think that being a scientist, I was curious about what was wrong with my brain. I got to watch circuit by circuit go offline in my ability to communicate in the external world, to think logically or linearly, paralysis of my body. So no, for me, I never hooked into fear. Now, that wasn't necessarily a good thing, because if I had hooked into fear, I might have stopped analyzing so much and actually gotten help quicker.
Hmm. You said in your TED Talk, which is just absolutely extraordinary, that you felt like a genie just liberated from her bottle. Describe that a little more.
Well, once I was no longer connected to the details of the external world, and my focus of area of awareness became very constricted to my body and the workings of my body. And in the absence of my higher cognitive thinking mind that was thinking about work and things I had to do or my relationships in the external world, in the absence of the way I define who Jill Bolte Taylor was before this stroke, and then in the release of all those details of that character, I felt this incredible sense of vast, open expansiveness. And in that expansiveness was no boundary of where I began or where I ended, because you have to have a group of cells in your left brain that actually define where I begin and where I end. And without those functioning, I felt as big as the universe.
So you remember realizing at one point that you were still alive, that you were still here. And you said you realized that if you were still alive, that everyone else should be able to experience it too. And I'm wondering, is that possible? Can we all experience nirvana, or do you have to suffer a stroke to get there, Jill?
Well, I think that we are biologically programmed to have that experience. And I think that there are different people who use different techniques or tools in order to achieve that level of experience of being, to run that specific circuitry. A lot of people use prayer. A lot of people use meditation. And ultimately what happens is that prayer is a language. It is something that we recite, and our language is in our left brain. And a meditation is something that we may take ourselves on a visual journey or some sort of journey, but we still have a linearity to that story. And as that mantra or that prayer preoccupies the left brain's ability to be divergent in what it's thinking about, like what I had for breakfast this morning or what I'm going to do, you know, in 5 minutes from now, when you focus that portion of the mind and it becomes quiet, it allows the experience of the present moment to become more open and expansive. And I do believe that it is a skill set that people can learn.
Huh. Hey, have you experienced nirvana since you had the stroke in 1996?
What I did was, when I lost the circuitry of my left brain, which is that brain chatter and my attachment to relationships and the external world, in the absence of focusing on that information, I allow myself to shift into the bigger picture consciousness of my right mind. So for me, I live more in my right mind in that open, expansive space, and then I come back into my life and my normal reality in order to run my world and to have a conversation with someone like you. So for me, it is a choice of being here or being there, if you will.
Meaning you can slip back and forth into nirvana and back out of it again?
Exactly. And I believe we all have that ability. I think the difference is I know what it feels like to be in that experience of absence of. And most of us are so caught up in the presence of all this other data processing in our minds that we don't know how to quiet that enough in order to have the other experience.
And so how often do you go there?
Oh, I that's my preference. That's where I begin my day.
Sounds good to me.
It does sound good, doesn't it? No, that's where I begin my day and end my day and spend most of my day. And then I come back into the normal way of being in order to function like a normal human being.
How do you get there?
For me, it's really easy because, first of all, I know what it feels like. You know, you have to consider that after the morning of the stroke happened, what happened was it was in my left brain, which shut down the left brain language centers. So the ability to create sound, dog, dog, dog is a sound that then your brain places meaning on. And you may have pictures of dogs flash through your mind when I say that, or you might actually see the letters D-O-G across your mind's eye. But in the absence of that is this ongoing experience of the present moment. And so for me, it's a matter of being willing to say, okay, this other data is not what I want to focus on. What I want to focus on is the way the trees, the movement of the trees in three dimension, and the way that the light beams through. And as I shift away from the language focus of my mind and how it defines my world to the experiential of being, then it allows me to make that shift simply.
And that just sounds like such an extraordinary gift, such an extraordinary opportunity.
You know, I actually knew it at the time on the day of the stroke when the left brain went offline. The language center went completely gone. I had a totally silent mind. And I got to sit in that absolute total silence for 5 weeks. And I knew during that 5 weeks that this was a blessing. And I kept focusing on what does this feel like? What does this feel like? Remember what this feels like so that I never lose it. And my mother would look at me and I'd be sitting on the couch and I'd be drooling and I'd be a mess, but I would be happy. And she would look and she would say, "Child, how can you be so happy?" And I just was, because my mind wasn't filled with all the stressors of my life that I should be worried about. And it was lovely.
You know, I'm probably like a lot of our listeners, Jill, listening to you talk. And, you know, I was surprised by your presentation at TED that you could recall all that you did about your stroke, because I guess I somehow thought that a stroke would disable your ability to do much of anything or to think much of anything.
You know, and I think that that's a key right there, because we look at people who have lost some of their left brain. And because the left brain is language, and I have to be able to say, I am an individual. My brain, I know who I am. You know that your name is Steve because your brain tells you that your name is Steve. Your brain tells you because it knows, your left brain knows, what is your phone number? What is your address? How do you find your way home? What's in your refrigerator? And what do you want to have for dinner tonight? All of those details are in your left brain, but that is not who Steve is. In the absence of all that data, there is still this experience, this essence of Steve. And it is that essence of Steve that is a part of all of humanity. And we all share that same piece of ourselves. And that's why when I talk about the difference between the characters of the right brain or the left brain is Steve, the individual, and all those details. And what does he like? And what color shoes does he like to wear? And what's his tie? And what do you look like? And what are all those details that define Steve as Steve? But in the absence of Steve, Steve's still this essence of brotherhood and sisterhood and a piece of humanity, and you have a relationship to the bigger picture of the planet and who are we as a people and what is that collective whole. Who are you when you're in your heart consciousness and open and really being? So we have these two different ways of being. And on the morning of the stroke, I just lost Jill Bolte Taylor. I lost the details of my left brain. But in the absence of that, I expanded as this heart felt collection of life and a part of humanity as part of the sisterhood and brotherhood of what we are. So there are these two parts of ourselves, but in our left brain dominant society, we shift into the consciousness of that left brain. And that's one of the reasons why I love this program that's coming up with Carrie Newcomer, because she is all about heart. And she brings song and music and lyric to the ordinary of what we are. And in the ordinary of what we are as humanity is extraordinary. And I think that that's why this show works so well, because we weave these two very conscious ways of being into the heart of us as well as the mind of us. And it becomes a whole brain, whole body experience.
Well, this is just so interesting to me. And the event that Jill is talking about concerns this, that she and Grammy-winning singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer will take part in an event called Transformative Stories. It'll be at 7 o'clock Thursday evening at Unity Temple on the Country Club Plaza. For tickets, go to festivaloffaithkc.com. www.brainsforhealth.org. And I'll put that address out again in just a few minutes. That's 7 o'clock Thursday evening at Unity Temple on the Plaza. You know, I'm just wondering, you know, there's a dramatic moment in your TED Talk, Jill, where you are handed a real human brain. You put on a pair of plastic gloves and you pick up the brain and you showed it to the audience. And I'm just wondering, what's it feel like?
Seriously, what does the brain feel like? You're asking me that question,
yeah.
Steve.
Yeah.
What is that? I love that. Okay. It feels like pork roast.
Really?
Yes.
Is it heavy?
In that condition, this was a brain that in order, when the brain first comes out of a body, it is very soft. And it's kind of like a soft tofu texture, if mm-hmm. you will. But then it will dissolve. The cells are actually designed to explode themselves and dissolve. So the brain is one of the first parts of the body that will actually dissolve. And so I had to put it in a fixative in order to bind the lipids inside of the membranes to make the brain stronger so that I could actually handle it over a long period of time. And so then it's kind of like a pork roast.
How distinct is this left half of the brain from the right half of the brain as you hold it in your hands?
You know, they're very different from one another. There is a natural twist in the way that the hemispheres take during development. And one hemisphere is usually a little bit larger than the other. And, you know, your brain is virtually identical to mine in the way the gyri, the bumps, are organized. Every bump has a name, and inside of that specific gyrus is a group of cells that performs a certain function like language. And so your brain is virtually identical to mine in the way it's organized, but from a physical standpoint, you might be really, really good at foreign languages, and I might be really bad at that. And so that portion of your brain would probably be a little more robust because those cells are sending dendrites and axons communicating with one another in that area, which would make it a little bit bigger. So, you know, the old science of phrenology, it was not correct, but at the same time, the theory behind it was actually pretty good.
You know, before we get too far away from it, I just want to get back to one point and circle back to it here. This notion of the best way to reach this place of happiness, this nirvana, for lay people, you would recommend, what's the most effective path that you found to get people into that space?
Well, I think first it's important to distinguish between nirvana, what I experience as euphoria or nirvana, versus happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is a positive emotion. It's it is generally in response to something outside of us. So you know, this, I have a house, it makes me happy. I have a dog, it makes me happy. Things make me happy. My job makes me happy. Happy is a positive expression. The experience of nirvana for me was the best way to describe is the absence of experience. The absence of experience was one of bliss. So in the absence of the good or the bad, the absence of the negative or the positive, the absence of any experience, so I was experiencing nothing except being, just being, in that space of awareness of, oh my gosh, I'm alive, is this incredible awe and sense of contentment that is so peaceful and so loving that the only language I could use to place on that was nirvana.
Well, today, do you consider yourself a scientist or a spiritual guru of sorts?
Boy, I don't really, you know, that's a tough one. I'm always asking, you know, people say you have to put, what's your occupation? And I have no idea what to put there. you know, I'm a journey woman is really what I am. And I'm a humanist. And I have, I think like a neuroscientist. I'm trained as a neuroscientist. I think as a whole-brained individual who has had the privilege of losing half of my mind and retaining the other half, and then rebuilding the half that I had lost. I'm not the same person I was before, because that woman actually really, her likes and dislikes, so much of her died that day. And it was important to us, my family, that we grieve the loss of whom I had been. My goal was never to come back to being her again. And we wanted to see, okay, well, who's this new character going to be? So I don't know. I think that's a really tough question.
Well, you now serve also, in addition to all that, as a CEO of My Stroke of Insight, Inc., and as the chair of the board of the nonprofit Jill Bulte Taylor Brains, Inc. Tell us about your work.
Well, I love presentation. For some reason, when I was invited to give the TED Talk, it was before TED was famous.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I was a keynoter about the brain and mental illness. That was my area of expertise at Harvard, was how our brain creates our perception of reality for schizophrenia and bipolar and normal control, looking at the tissue. As a neuroanatomist, I thought it was beautiful. I still think it's beautiful. So I was already, an expert on the severe mental illnesses, and I was a keynote presenter at conferences. And then after the stroke happened and I lost the left half of my brain and I retained the right half of my brain, and then I recovered consciously choosing which circuits to bring back online and which ones I didn't like the way they felt, and so that wasn't going to happen anymore. It's just been this incredible journey, and people, I do believe that the evolution of humanity is going towards whole brain thinking and being,
mm-hmm.
and we have skewed ourselves to the left. And I think we are yearning, our souls are yearning to come back to the compassion and openness and expansiveness and collectiveness of being whole brained. And I think that's why, I'm invited as a keynoter, because we are fascinating and we all have a brain, and isn't it lovely when the brain works well? And wow. So when I come in and I talk about the brain, you get a little bit about my brain, but it's not about my brain. It's about your brain and how to, what's going on in there, and how to think about it, and how to relate to it, and how to get it to do what you want it to do, and how to work with it and nurture it. And what's actually going on when you're having unpleasant things going on, and what are your choices? So I have a great time with an audience, and I'm planning on having a great time on Thursday.
Well, a film is being made of your life, Jill. Just a final point here. Who's starring as Dr. Jill Bulte Taylor?
Well, we haven't gotten that far yet, but I'm looking forward to the answer to that. And
who really do you want to play you?
Who do I want to play me? Here's the thing about me being a right brain person instead of a left brain. My left brain would give you a list of names, and my right brain is going to say the exact right person is going to show up at the exact right time, and that is going to be the perfect person.
Dr. Jill Bulte Taylor and Grammy-winning singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer will take part in an event called Transformative Stories, 7 o'clock Thursday evening at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Tickets go to festivalofacekc.org. Jill, what a fascinating conversation. I sure appreciate you taking the time.
I appreciate it, Steve. And I would like to add that I believe that this presentation, Transformative Stories with Carrie, is the most beautiful thing I get to do. And so I do hope people will come with open hearts and open minds and plan on having an excellent evening.
Thanks, Jill. We'll see you in town.
Thanks, Steve.